Okay, so my name is Chevy, and here I have my partner in crime,
Faye.
Faye. We are starting our first podcast. This is mostly my podcast. As I said, my name is Chevy. This podcast is about mental health, relationships, and emotions. I've learned a lot about these things in the past several years. I'd say mostly in the past 10 months when I really crash-coursed it. And I have learned so much about myself, about other people, about how relationships work. And I am now almost 7 months into my relationship with my boyfriend, Faye. I went from dating men at a young age until the age of 20, where I met a woman and who I subsequently married and had two children with. And
Oh, they are just priceless.
thank
They're
you.
wonderful. They are, Chevy.
They're amazing kids. And they lived with me after we broke up until last May. So about exactly 1 year ago. So I had a girlfriend after that for 3.5 years. It was a ended up being a slightly abusive relationship on her end. I'm not saying I was a saint with my wife. I have my regrets, my mistakes. But with my girlfriend, yeah, I don't think I was treated very well. And I've come to the conclusion now that I am done dating women. I do not want to. I'm comfortable with men, and actually I'm comfortable with only one man only, that being Faye, my partner here, as we're going to call him.
Hello.
Hello. And yeah, I'm very happy. So what I want to talk about right now tonight is attachment styles in relationships. So let me start with saying that when I was very young, my mother was emotionally unstable, and it came out in various ways. Some were abusive, emotionally. It wasn't physical, never got till later, and it was very few and far between. But emotionally, my mother was very manipulative and abusive as I was younger, threatening to kill herself, and it would be my fault or my sister's fault, our fault. And, yeah, things like that. Screaming at us in the car for hours on the way to family therapy, which took an hour to get there because at the time we lived in the middle of the freaking mountains of Maine. I had to travel about 35 miles just to get there. Anyway, though, my father, who I always looked up to, he was at the bar most of the time. He was off drinking or being with buddies because honestly, he hadn't loved my mother for a long time. And he'd even cheated on her. He admitted this to me later in life that he cheated on my mother. And you know what? I understand that. Knowing my mother now, I don't blame him. Honestly, I really don't. So my mother has some kind of fear of sex, fear of intimacy. She feels that if she has sex with someone, and I can just tell this, that she will open herself up emotionally. And if she does that, that's what she's afraid of. She doesn't want to be hurt again.
I don't blame her for that one.
I feel the same way, but I'm willing to take chances. And unlike how she was raised, I am a sexual person. And I was raised almost not to be, but I defied my parents, my mother, that is. My parents separated when I was 10. I lived with my mother and my sister until college at age 18. And yeah, so she's like, she thinks sex is a horrible thing. Like, if somebody wants to communicate sexually without them being in a long-term relationship first, she cannot handle that. And that's how she was raised. She's not Catholic, but that is how she grew up. And I guess nobody can argue with that. That's how she feels. But she tried to instill that in me, and it definitely put a certain viewpoint of sex in my mind. While I still enjoy it, and I will, and when I was single, yes, I had casual sex, few and far between, but I did it when I was desperate, yeah. When you need attention, I guess, if you
Yeah,
can.
that's true. I remember those days myself.
Yeah, talk about it. Yeah, what'd you do,
I
Matt?
mean, heck, myself, my family never really, discussed sex as a, taboo thing. We never talked about it. So when we decided to sit there and, actually have the discussion of, sex ed in school and everything else with that, it was wow, eye opener. But they never really discuss, long-term relationships. If you're in a long-term relationship, make it meaningful here. Nope, my family never did that. I gave it up willingly, and I was so young, and I don't even remember who the first person was. I don't even remember my first kiss. Oh, that's bad. But yeah, just I see sex, and I was very, you know, I wouldn't say fertile myrtle, but it was, I kind of gave it up freely, and, you know, my partner, you know, Chevy and I, we've talked about it and our past and everything and how we've grown up with that. And honestly, you know, we worked through some differences, and I'm really proud of them.
Thank you. I wouldn't have used to have been able to have gotten over this. It took a lot of maturing prior and during, when I was with my, who became my wife, girlfriend at age 20. I learned of her previous sexual history, and it was far beyond my comfort zone. And I had to deal with that. I had to accept that. I apologize. I'm still getting used to the Anchor software, and we had some issues with this website. Just be like I said, Spotify is still way better than doing anything with Apple. So, but anyways, I'm starting anew, trying to close on the subject. So, this whole podcast was supposed to be about attachment styles, and a lot of that is sexuality. So, as I'm trying to say, basically in a nutshell, in my childhood, my mother raised me to think sex in general was bad, and that you should have it in a relationship. Probably few and far between would be her opinion. And unfortunately, being a young testosterone-fueled male, I did not really believe that same way. And I still really value my sex. I am monogamous with my partner here. I have been so for over half a year.
Hello, how
are
you doing?
I've been so for half a year, and I am set with my ways. I do not want anybody else. I don't want anybody else. I don't want to be anybody else. I don't want to do anything with anybody else. I am happy with just Matthew. And that makes me happy. That is what makes me happy.
Thank you, Chevy. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. I would say, I believe I've said some of this before, but I lost the whole recording. So let's try again. Whee! So I, at age 13, remember thinking long and hard about how my ultimate goal in life was, even at age 13, was to find one romantic partner and settle down with them forever and be happy.
You know, I had that too. I had where...
What killed it? Tell me about it and how it was killed.
Oh, let's see. I'm talking to the mic.
I'm
talking to the mic. What? You want me to blow the mic too? No. I remember being like, what? 9, 11, and just fantasizing that I was with a guy. I knew one day I'd be with one. Didn't know who, but I know I didn't have one.
I imagined girls until I was about 12.
See, dated girls and everything, and just it was not my thing.
Me either, honestly.
I mean, I saw them more as friends than I did boyfriends and girlfriends.
The only thing I liked about girls was the pornography, to be honest.
I could be their best friend. That's all it could be.
Well,
no further.
Look at my last girlfriend. How masculine was my last girlfriend?
Helga.
She's a wonderful person.
She is.
But goddamn, is she masculine as a fucking all hell.
Do you?
You know what? I did like butchy ones, I guess, because you know what? When I decided that I was going to stop dating women and only go towards men again after my 20s, it was one of the best choices I ever made.
Yes.
And it really was. Life is better now. But I'm saying that. So my attachment style, though, I am very what's called codependent. I tend to cling to my partner, and I cling because of my past. As a child with my mother, who was emotionally unstable, and my father, who was emotionally unavailable, I developed a type of avoidant attachment style, avoidant anxious. It's called an avoidant anxious attachment style. And that is what I unfortunately developed. And when I had a partner, say Matthew, for example, hopefully the last partner of my whole life, baby.
I hope so too, babe.
I love you.
I love you.
And that's all I ever want. And the thing is that, so I work full time. I work about 37 hours a week. I think that's decent. And
you're such a hard worker too.
Thank you. My job title is irrelevant right now, but... So I often need to text my partner. I need to text him throughout the day. And when I use the bathroom or at the moment when I know the manager has left the floor, just to say hello and tell him that I love him. Mm. And apparently most of the time he's always reciprocal of such. He gives it back to me. But sometimes I can tell by the way he types that you Would you rather me just kind of ease off a bit?
Yeah.
So let me talk about that.
What?
How you feel about that?
I feel like when I need you to ease off?
Yeah.
Oh.
How often did I text you the other day now?
Today, you didn't really text me that much. Oh, actually, no. It was more normal today.
So this morning it was, and it stopped.
Yeah, because I was doing paperwork with a couple of friends of mine.
Actually, I stopped after I saw you in person. I stopped texting as much.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Because neither here actually understands my codependency to the point of being willing to drive to my work, which is not far away, but drive to my work and see me just for a smoke break and wait for me for 15 minutes if he asked to. And that is fucking dedication, man. Thank you, and I love you.
I love you too, babe.
Anyway, though.
But no, just, you know, some days that I feel like you're blowing up the phone, and other days it's just like, hey, babe. Hello?
It depends on how...
Situations on how you feel.
How anxious I am, yeah.
Yes.
When you're an anxiety disorder like I have, you know, it's really easy to slip into that, like, oh my God, I'm not comfortable myself, I need my partner kind of mode.
It is. And there's, on the opposite end, as the partner that, you know, has the partner that is very codependent, you know, you sometimes are going to feel very overwhelmed. And
I understand that.
You know, for the partner that doesn't understand, it's, oh my God, like, I love you, please, just, you know what, people, just roll with it. Be there for them. That's all it is. Just be there for them.
Generally, people like me don't ask for much except for emotional needs. Like, I appreciate the rides everywhere, but if it really came down to it, trust me, I got 2 feet and a great expensive pair of boots. I can hoof it anywhere I fucking need to. If I need a taxi, got $4 in my wallet, I can get a fucking cheap ride. But to have the ability to have that free ride is amazing.
I try not to
take advantage of that.
And you don't.
I really care about you and your resources and our car, you know, as you call it.
Yeah, guess, our car gizmo.
So,
yeah.
Seeing that. For codependent people, you need somebody that is there for them emotionally. Somebody that can listen to them when they have problems. That when they're feeling lonely, will be there to say, it's okay, I'm right here, I love you, and I will see you after work, blah, blah. I want general reassurance. And this is just coming from the fact that I know myself so well. I'm able, even in high-stress situations, to look at myself from a third-party point of view, not me thinking about it, and say, what is going on in my head right now? What am I feeling? How am I acting? And, so I realize what I'm doing, and it comes to a point where I just can't control it. Codependency is can only be controlled so far. And I only want it on one person. Matt has commented, have you not, that I am not codependent on other people. I don't act the same. I said, that's right.
No, you're not.
You're right. And I don't, because they're not you.
No. And, you know, you've explained this to me so many times.
I'm not codependent on everybody. It's just one person, my favorite person. I have BPD, borderline personality disorder. And that gives me the sense of having a favorite person, an FP. That person is one that I dedicate all of my time and attention to over everybody else in the world.
And, you know, some days I feel like you put me on that pedestal where it's so high, I'm like, oh my God.
It's only high to me, honey. It's only high in my world. It's not like I'm asking anybody else to need you, you know?
Yeah.
I need you. And unfortunately, it's the pathetic person I am.
It is. And, you know, we've been together, what, six, seven months already?
Oh, 6.5.
Yeah, 6.5, something like that. And, you know, learning this as a hard lesson when you're not used to it, you know, to someone who's not used to it expressing so much emotions.
I like to say things exactly how they are.
You do.
I will put them flat out on the table. This is how I feel. Take it or leave it, motherfucker.
Detail, detail, details. And someone that's not used to that, where like I had an upbringing where it's like, oh, you feel this way, deal with it and walk away.
My mother was highly emotional. My father was mostly absent. So I learned from my mommy and I became a highly emotional, codependent person.
Yeah.
But I would rather be a highly emotional, codependent person than be somebody who hides his emotions under the rug and pretends like he is a shell when he has an explosion going on in his head.
Yeah, this is true.
Why keep composure if you're lying?
I guess I've always kept the composure only because, one, my job. I've kept the composure only because, one, my job, two, you know, Just family is, family's always taught me that, you know, oh, this is your feelings, deal with it. We don't talk about
my
it.
My family was like, I learned to express everything you felt.
But then my family wanted me to express everything. And then when I started speaking up, it was like, oh, but, like, you have to be quiet. You have to be quiet now.
So you not, I think it's important to point out you were adopted.
Oh, yes, I was.
You were a Costa Rican and a Central American native.
Correct.
And you're adopted by a white family in Pennsylvania, I believe.
Correct. Virginia.
Then moved to Pennsylvania.
Correct.
Right. And so you were outcasted because you were older. They probably regretted that they adopted someone. And that is a horrible, horrible thing to feel. I can't even imagine how anybody can feel that way.
Well,
if I were to adopt a child, that child, I would understand is my responsibility. And I would love that child to the end of his or her days.
Well, I mean, it was even more difficult when... what was it? I found out, like, what, within the last 12 years, actually, that, what was it, like, I'm 40 now here, so I'd say probably when I was about, what, 35, 32, that my family really didn't want me.
How did you find that out?
Oh, my God. My aunt sat there one day, and she and I were talking. And
Aunt Linda?
Oh, yeah, Aunt Linda. Yeah. And she just blurted out, like, well, you have to remember, like, your father didn't even want you. Excuse me?
So where does this, this is a whole nother rabbit hole to go down.
Oh, it is.
Where does this tie into your promiscuity regarding sex? These are your deepest traumas, okay? These are your deepest triggers. So most people that have extraordinarily promiscuous sex tend to have some kind of trauma that they're trying to make up for, a feeling that they're lacking. Where do you think that played into it?
I think she just...
No, I mean, where do you think all that played into your sex life?
I think if I really have to think about it, it was just like, it was almost like adolescence all over again in a small sense.
Yeah. I started doing it when I was 10, 10, 30 and 32 now. It hasn't been that long, but I started getting into Grindr again and stuff because I feel like I missed out on all my 20s and I'm like, I need to feel like I'm young again.
Yeah. And I actually, yeah, that's perfectly well said because that was it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm being told like, oh, well, you need to be with someone. You have to date. You have to go out and do this. I was like,
see, you can't just tell people that. You can suggest it. You give them reasons why it's a good idea, but don't tell them they actually have to do.
Well, then it was like,
I'll never listen to that. I wouldn't listen either.
Oh my God.
Like, fuck you.
Like, I wanted to be with someone. I really did.
Now you're telling me I have to. Fuck you. I'm not going to do it now.
Well, no. Well, finally I got to the point where, it was just like, oh, you got to do this. Like, you know what? I don't want to be in it with anyone because honestly, all the rejection I've had, you know, all the hard times.
Oh, man, I feel you. I know all about rejection. I was stood up and I showed up in person to the park twice for two different girls. When I was looking for girls, bad mistake. And they both stood me up. Never blocked me, just wouldn't all look at my messages. And I never showed up. And, you know, there's more than that. I've been turned down. I know what it's like. And
it sucks. And
Matt, I know you're 5'2". You're short. I'm 5'6". I think you're my beautiful little wrestler here. The stronger upper body strength than I have.
Come on, you're
strong. Oh, yeah, no, you are. It's so sexy. Anyway, so where does it? So
me, well, anyways,
you see where my sexual life came out as me wanting a relationship because that's what I was learned.
Also,
I'm codependent. You can't be sleeping around with everybody if you're codependent. You'd have that one person.
It was okay. Now I'm lost here.
tell me about why you got into the PNP lifestyle.
Oh,
we're going to talk about it right now. We're going to open and talk about it.
Oh, okay, fine.
It's in the past.
I got into it because I went on like one outing with a guy one time, and I remember doing it like years ago when I was in Utah.
And what years was that?
Oh Lord, I was 27. Yeah, 27.
So it's about 13 years ago.
Yeah, well, go back 15, 16.
Fair enough. I have passed them too. Anyway.
And got with one guy and he was a partier and next thing you know, like, it's okay, I guess. I don't know if it's my thing. And
it's the best sex of your life.
It just went on forever.
Oh, yeah.
And it, like, went on all night. And I was like, oh my God, is that time already? I gotta go. And
I did that one time.
And the next thing, like, I kind of slowly caught myself going back, and he'd ask me out again. I'm like, well,
it was such a good experience last time.
why not again? You know, yeah. Like I didn't get rejected. Well, you know bought what? Me dinner. And
I'm not going to lie. I've never been bought anything by a date, and I have never been seen, not one would ever see more than once. I was usually, and they enjoyed the first date, and then it was just rejection from there.
Oh, no. I remember taking you out the first time, and God, I had to have you out again. Oh,
honey, I'm so glad you really wanted to do it. No, I know, I know what it's like to be rejected, hence my, I have sexual insecurity. I am a little concerned about myself performance-wise, looks-wise. There's a lot of factors about myself that I question, especially in a sexual situation. And so...
You're still sexy no matter what.
And that means the world to me that you say that.
You were sexy as hell, babe.
So the point is that... you distracted the hell out of me. Good job. The point is that I am sexually insecure, therefore P&P usually involves multiple partners. I need to at least be aware of a general idea of who my partner is. I can't just get it on with a random stranger and go banging in the bathroom stall or something. Like, I need to know who this person is, and then I might be able to enjoy intercourse with them. If they're lucky, honestly, I am very picky, and I happen to meet this one person sitting right next to me, and I felt something about him. He couldn't spell a shit on his messenger, but fuck, he tried, and I thought it was an amazing effort. I noticed the improvement. I noticed that improvement, Matt, when you were getting better. I've seen the improvement.
Thank you.
Yeah, honestly, about a month in, you know, and the fact that this guy is so beautiful to me, actually really seemed to want me for me. He wanted a monogamous relationship. Thank you. Same. And it's like, so yeah, this is what I've always wanted. And now my sex, I'm never insecure about my sex because I'm with the same person I've always been comfortable with for so long.
And that's amazing.
Yeah, thank you. It really is. And it's a level of comfort that I require now. Like, if we would have a threesome, which I don't think we will anytime soon, but if we did, I might be I'm a little trouble getting it up because there's a third party that I'm not comfortable with, but I do not know in the bedroom. And depending on
we're jealous. Looks, we are jealous.
I get very jealous. You do not get jealous.
Actually, be surprised.
I won't bring it up in this podcast. I think our listeners might know, but something happened that I'm not going to bring up.
Like, no, we're not going to touch that one. No,
we shouldn't.
We're not going to touch that one.
You're a little jealousy. But anyway, No, I'm a very jealous person. My borderline personality disorder definitely gets in the way and makes me more jealous. I require certain things more often than other people do. A little bit of reassurance here and there. You know, if you're with somebody else, yeah, sometimes I question if I'm being cheated on or not. And it's not that I actually don't trust you. As I've explained, I do trust you, my partner, my lover. Really do. But there's always a second voice in my head, thanks to the borderline personality. It is not dissociative identity disorder, but BPD. It's another voice in my head. That's my voice saying, but you don't know it for sure. You better check that. You better look into this. You better make sure. And you get a picture of it. That one I ignore. I ignore that request. But yeah, and so I feel like I can't trust because I've been screwed over so many times in my past, and it's been a lot. I've been screwed over a lot. And so that makes it really hard for me to find full trust in somebody that has already betrayed my trust once.
I understand. I do.
You have the floor, honey.
I know I have the floor, but what else to say? But I understand. And again, it's one of those where I have a going on the subject here.
You're right. We shouldn't. You know what? You know what? Hey, what do I have every night? Every single when I go to bed, what do I have?
You got me.
What are you doing?
Cuddling you.
Cuddle the shit out of me. I am a cuddle whore, and it does depend on the person.
It does.
Honestly, Matthew is the only person I feel comfortable, truly comfortable cuddling since my ex-wife, actually. And I feel truly safe with this person. I feel mentally and physically safe. The sex out of this world. I do have a dominant style myself, but at the same time, I'm more of a submissive dominant. If that makes sense. Yes. I'm a little mix of the two.
Yeah,
it depends on my mood. Sometimes I might be a certain persona.
Persona.
Sometimes I might be another one, or just myself.
Think we all have our own personas.
Yeah, they come out in the bedroom, I know for sure. But anyway. I think, thank you all for listening to this podcast. Matt, do you have any last words to say?
I have none, but thank you everyone for listening, and God bless you. God save the Queen.
called Blish. I won. So, holding in that Rangers podcast. No, I said so though. I'd love to hear other opinions about your sexual style, you know, your attachment style, your relationship, as anxious avoidant or if it's, you know, secure women. So you can email me at Brian Barter, BRB, that's BRIANBARTER 64 at gmail.com. And let me know what you think. And I'd love to have some feedback. And now I hope I plan on touching on a lot more subjects. This is just a start. I'm also working. I'm going to do an episode about my speech impediment. That's going to be one of my topics. For example, if you can sit through this with my voice right now, bravo to fucking you. And I'm embarrassed as hell, but you know what? I'm putting this out there anyway.
Babe, you're doing great.
Thank you. And gonna deal with our own insecurities, face them head on. They will drag you down if you don't. Thank you.
Thank you.